Hi, this is Teal-B, and you're listening to GeoTalk, where you can hear interesting interviews with geocachers like Nobodies, Rabbito, Postigirl 06, Tank Engine, and Bear Left. Now it's time for GeoTalk.
In this episode of GeoTalk, we speak to MOS6510 about a creative cache he's put together, learn how to get the jump on others in that first-to-find hunt, and we give you the first round of audio clues for a new series of caches around the country. All this and more on GeoTalk. Well, welcome to episode 31 of GeoTalk, and you probably can tell my voice is maybe a little more deeper and a bit more gravelly, thanks to me going to the football last night to watch the Aussie Rules game between Collingwood and Sydney. And even though I live in Sydney, I'm not a bit Sydney Swans fan, unless, of course, they're not playing my team, which is Collingwood. Congratulations to the boys. Unfortunately, you're going to have to put up with my voice sounding like I've gone through a cold and gargled gravel for the last half an hour. But anyway, let's see how we go. At the start of the episode, you might have heard Teal-B rattle off a few names. Now, I'm not going to tell you too much about what she said or why she said it, except to say that it's one of the first clues that you will need to jot down if you're looking for a new set of geocaches which are being unveiled next month around the country. Now, first of all, a big thank you to Caught at Work for organising all this. It's been a mammoth effort over the last couple of weeks. And over the next three episodes, so this one, episode 32 and 33, which will be coming out in 2 and 4 weeks' time, you'll be able to get clues to help you find their caches around the country. You'll hear later in this episode an interview with Steve Zonoff from down Canberra way, actually out in an area called Bungendore, where we talk about a fairly unique cache. And it got me thinking over the last 2 weeks about geocaching and why, for example, I do it. And I must admit, I love some of the fantastic locations and some of the creative ideas that people come up with. And I'd love to hear from you guys what you think is your favorite geocache, what's the ultimate geocache, and what are maybe some of the lesser ones that you've come across. So get on the phone, give us a call on 02-800-50-436, so that's 850-GEO, or drop us an email to geotalk@mac.com. Love to hear from you about what you think is your favourite geocache and or maybe least favourite one and why. A quick geocaching resource that I thought I'd all let you know. I stumbled across this one from a Google ad, actually. If you go to www.gps-data, so that's data-team.com.au. So go to gps-data-team.com. They have a number of different resources. A lot of them are free, mainly points of interest. So they have red light cameras, black spot indicators, rest stops and so forth. So it's worth checking those out. A lot of them are free. Some you can pay for, but go to that website and see what you can grab for pretty much any GPS device that's out on the market. Well, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, there are audio clues that are going to be scattered all throughout this episode, so here's a few more.
This is Astro John from Team Astro. Your first clue for Astroism's GC1CFHJ is... G'day, this is Big Matt and Shell. This week's clue is a smiley face is 1, a cross is 2, and a heart is 8. Good luck.
Good evening. This is Team Rubik. The nature of these clues will not give you coordinates. However, they will help to pinpoint the location where you should begin your search. Good luck.
One of the great things about geocaches is that they're not just into chasing after ammo cans or plastic containers in the bush. A lot of them are quite creative as well. And one area on the GCA forums that certainly gets quite a few views is the Geo Photos contest, which is run by Bronze up in the Hunter Valley, formerly of Red Ochre Caching out in Dubbo. And he's just completed competition number 9, which was to do with Sunset Sunrise. And you can check out the winners on the GCA forums. I'll give you a link to those in the show notes. Some beautiful pictures in those. And the next one, I think, at the moment that he's organising is Silhouettes and then Flash Photography for Challenges 10 and 11. So check those out on the GCA forums, the Geophotos contest. A reminder to all our international listeners outside of Australia that the GeoTalk GeoCoin is now available for sale for you guys as well. The Australians have all had a bit of time to get hold of theirs. Most of the coins have been sold, which is great, but we've still got plenty more to sell. So go to the website geotalkpodcast.com and you can order your GeoCoins through the website there, or you can get in touch with us at geotalk@mac.com to find out a bit more information. Well, before we get into the feature article for this particular episode, the trivia question for GeoTalk episode 31, who are the oldest, or I should say longest, because not necessarily the oldest, but who are the longest active caches in each of the states of Australia? And just to make our Kiwi friends feel welcome, also the longest serving active geocaches in the North and South Islands of New Zealand. The answer to that at the end of the podcast.
G'day, this is Papa Bear Left. I'd just like to say 118 Tau.
Zactyl here. So descends Keisha. Search must continue.
G'day, this is Murph letting you know that you might need to research the native and naturalised flora of the Shire of Leeton.
Well, on this episode of GeoTalk, we head down to just outside the Canberra region, out in an area near Bungendore, and we're chatting with Steve, also known as MOS6510. Thanks for joining us.
G'day. Hello, everybody.
All right, Steve. Well, first of all, tell us a little bit how you got into geocaching, and when did you start getting involved in this crazy pastime or sport?
It was sometime in 2006. I was working with a couple of good blokes here in Canberra, and one of them was a keen geocacher. And I think I'd heard about it a little bit earlier, but I just didn't quite get it. You know, I suppose a lot of people are used to having to explain what geocaching's about. And I was one of those people. I just didn't quite get what the big deal was. And I had GPS units for hiking and things like that. Always loved the gadget appeal of the things as well. But then he took me... we went for a drive into Sydney, and he was sort of pointing out all the caches along the way and started telling me stories a bit about where he'd been and so on. And I tried it once and was hooked. So, about 2006 we've been, and that's thanks to Endian here in Canberra.
I was going to ask if you can name names. And tell us a little bit about yourself. What's your background?
Started working career as a radio technician for the Royal Australian Navy. And... about 10 years ago, I got out of the Navy and I stayed in Canberra in IT, as a lot of people in Canberra are, and but kept electronics as a hobby. So my interests really are a little bit of software development as a hobbyist, at a hobbyist level, and digital and analog electronics, digital electronics and radio. And wherever I can, I try to sort of meld the two together, or the three together.
And that'd be how you got your name, coming from an electronics background.
That's right. I'm a Commodore computer fanatic. It's the first computer I used as a kid, and the MOS 6510 comes from the name of the microprocessor in the Commodore 64. So I don't know. I think that's just going to make people think I'm pretty sad, but I think they're fun little machines.
Well, obviously, we come from the same era. We were born about the same time, because I remember always wanting to go to the friend's house who had the Commodore 64. What was your favourite game?
Jumpman. I'm sure some people have heard of that, but it's got nothing going for it if you just see stills of it, but the gameplay is pretty good. So, although, if I was trying to impress somebody, I'd say Impossible Mission, something like that, because that one game of the year in 84.
I was going to say that was the one I think that most people played on the Commodore 64. That or Ghostbusters, I think, was a popular one as well.
Well, they both had speech. That was pretty special.
Gee, that takes me back a bit. All right, well, back to geocaching. I mean, the main reason why I've chatting to you is because you've come up with a fairly innovative cache, and Web Guy came up to me a few weeks ago and he said, you must find this cache down in the Canberra region because it's fantastic. It has Morse code type signal and you've got to use your car radio and so forth. Well, rather than me trying to explain it, tell us about this cache and how you came about to develop it.
Well, actually, the cache was developed because there's nothing special about the cache. I never had a good location to put a cache, and I'd been to, I think I must have done about 30 caches by the time I decided to come up with a cache of my own. And all the good places that I'd been to had been taken. I couldn't think of an interesting place that I'd like to take caches. Now, the other problem is where my cache is, there's not a lot of other caches around it. So I had to find a bit of a gimmick to attract people out that far. You know, if you drove out to where my cache is, you're probably only going to pick up one or two, and you're still going to drive a fair bit to get those. So it's a lot of a long drive for not much reward generally. So I had to put a bit of a gimmick behind it, and hence the transmitter part.
All right, so it's got a transmitter. Tell us about what would happen if someone was heading up to your cache.
Well, the transmitter range is... probably realistically about 60 or 70 metres from where it is. It's pretty high up in a tree. You drive up towards the area and then you'd start scanning around the 107 megahertz on your FM dial. The reason I say around a range of frequencies is because the transmitter is very simple, very low powered, and it gets affected by temperature. So if it's a nice sunny day, it drifts, one direction in frequency. If it's cold, it drifts another direction. So you have to find somewhere to park. I've given some guidance on where it'd be a good spot to hear the transmitter. Sit there, listen for beeps. It's not Morse code. I decided not to use Morse code because that would mean you'd have to, a lot of people, including me, would have to take a little Morse code lookup table with them. Anyway, so you count the beeps and you just get a long string of numbers. And if you're familiar with the way, a location in this area would look like, a lat long for this sort of area would look like, you'd pretty easily pick out what the actual coordinates are. And then the cache itself is just a little bit up the road.
And how many people have come across the cache?
Oh, you got me on the spot there. I don't know. It's not that popular, I suppose. Because it's so far out, and there is a risk that, you know, somebody, i.e. a possum, has knocked the thing out of a tree or something like that, and you've just driven a long way, particularly with fuel prices and stuff, there's a risk that you won't find it. I'm probably averaging one every 2 months.
Right. And what sort of feedback do you get?
Oh, it's always fairly positive. Even the guys who don't find the cache or don't hear the signal still say they're going to come back for more. So it surprised me a little bit, to be honest. Like I said, it was set up that way as a gimmick because the end destination is just the box under a tree. It's nothing special about it. But I've been surprised at how supportive people are. And it's, I was expecting to probably decommission the thing after a while, after I've sort of proven to myself that I can do it and keep this thing going out in the bush like this. But in fact, what I've decided to do is put a backup system in place. So I've got all the bits together. I just haven't winched the backup system on the tree. So I'm going to simulcast on a different frequency so that if the cockies chew one to bits, another one will still be beeping away. Now, I feel really bad when somebody marks a do not find. Often they mark that because it's a late in the day and it's a cloudy day or something like that and the solar panels just aren't powering the little thing. But still, it sort of hurts me a bit because I can understand how far people have driven to get the thing. So there'll be a second one up pretty soon.
Does it take a bit of maintenance to keep it running?
No. I'd have to climb a tree to touch it, so I don't even go up.
Right. how difficult, like if someone was listening to this and thought, well, that's a fantastic idea, I want to build one, how difficult is it to put together?
Well, it's three basic bits. Any electronics enthusiast would know of the concept of stuff in your junk box. This was built from bits in your junk box. I didn't buy anything for it. So the power for the thing, the solar panels, are little garden light solar panels. You know, the little LED garden lights you can buy for a few dollars at the local, you know, $2 shop or whatever. So I've used an array of those, and there's, I think there's six of those that I had, and they were trashed lights, but I salvaged the little solar cells off them. So that's the power. The transmitter is a very simple single transistor design that I got out of an old book called published by Talking Electronics, and that's a very old book. But if you search for that sort of thing on the internet, you'll find all sorts of designs for FM transmitters. They're very simple. They're a little bit touchy to set up, but they're very simple once you've got them going. And then, of course, the main part is the control part. Now, I use the device called a PIC-X 08, which is a microcontroller. The beauty of these things are that they're very, very simple to write software for. You can develop the code in BASIC, the old-fashioned BASIC that the Commodore 64 had, or you could also develop the code in flowcharts, or a visual way with flowcharting. All these things combined together is pretty simple, really. That wouldn't take much effort to come up to scratch if you've got some basic electronics nous about you.
Right. Now, obviously, some people would be thinking there are some restrictions on being able to broadcast. You mentioned that it only transmits to about 70 metres, so that's how you get around those, I suppose, transmission laws?
Well, the actual laws are that you're not allowed to transmit more than 10 microwatts in the FM broadcast band. Now, it's the how can I explain it? They have a class of license called the Low Interference Potential Devices, and this classifies as one of those. If you want to transmit outside of the FM broadcast band, you can transmit a bit more power. For instance, I was initially planning on requiring that the caches use a scanner, a UHF scanner, to find this cache. The reason for that is that from somewhere like JCAR, you can go and buy these tiny little, I don't know what they are, they're probably 15 milliwatt transmitters. They're tiny little things, $10 they'll cost you, but they transmit on the 434 megahertz band. Now, you'd have to take a special piece of equipment to receive that. I reckon a lot of caches have probably got that equipment, i.e. the scanner, but you get a lot more range out of it. It'd be a lot simpler setup as well. But yes, the ACMA have strict rules, particularly in the FM broadcast band, and the power input to this transmitter, when calculated out and allowing for some inefficiencies in the design, is less than 10 microwatts, but it's up high.
Right. Okay, so if for anyone who's thinking of replicating this sort of type of cache, that's something they should take into consideration.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, because you can cause interference to other people.
Now that you've had this radio transmitter cache out for a while, you got any plans, you know, for any new different types of electronic type caches that you're going to put out in the near future?
No, I haven't thought about putting another cache up anywhere. I had thought about maybe putting another one in the area, but just a simple non-multi cache somewhere around there, just to give some the people something else to go for while they're out that way. The only other electronic related caching stuff I'm going to do is to do the backup transmitter at the same site, just in case the other one falls out of the tree.
Well, I know that I've driven along that road once before, and it is a beautiful alternative if you're travelling to Canberra from Sydney or from Goulburn, because you can, I think you turn off at Goulburn and head south and head towards Bungendore. Fantastic woodwork gallery down there as well. There's a plug for them. But anyone who's in the area should check out this cache by MOS 6510. Steve, thanks very much for chatting, and all the best with your caching adventures and joining us on GeoTalk.
Thanks very much, Darren. I'll be listening out for future podcasts. The ones that I've listened to so far sound good. Thanks.
Hi, this is Rich from Kalumping 4. Besides geocaching, the family like to play with trains on the island of Sodor and Scrabble.
Hi, this is Caught at Work. Your clue is
off off on 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 off off on off off on on off on on off on on off 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 on off on off off.
Hi, this is Team Red Roo. My first clue A great man once said, to play fair or not play fair, that is a question, or words to that effect.
Welcome to the first in a series of geocaching tips that I thought we might introduce into each episode, and you're more than welcome to contribute. In fact, I'd love to hear from all of you about some of the ways in which you make geocaching a little bit easier and faster for you to go out and log your finds. So if you want to do that, just send us an email to geotalk@mac.com, or better still, why not read it out? Give us a call on 02-850-GEO. The geocaching tip for this particular episode is email notifications. Now, email notifications are really handy to find out when a particular cache, for example, is published, or when it becomes archived, or whether there's a find, or any sorts of things. Now, typically, when you're the owner of a cache, you'll always get an email to let you know that a cache has been found or not found or requires maintenance. And you can do a similar thing with the watch lists. But this particular feature on the geocaching.com website allows you to be notified by email of when the approvers approve and publish a particular cache in your region. So what you need to do is open up geocaching.com, and this particular feature, I should point out, is only for premium members, so only those of you who subscribe to geocaching or to Groundspeak. So go to the My Account page and click on that. And when that's open, have a look on the right-hand column that appears on your screen, and you'll see there's a heading called Premium Features. And underneath that heading, there is a link called Setup Notifications. So you click on that particular link, and that will bring up a new page. And once you're there, you'll be able to create a new notification. Now, if you had any that you're already set up, they'll be listed here. But in this particular case, if it's your first one, go to Create a New Notification. And that brings up another new page, and in here you'll be able to name it, so you can give it a name. So in this particular case, we want to find out whenever there are new traditional caches that are appearing in our area that have been approved. So we'll type in, for example, traditional caches. Then you go to a drop-down menu and you select which type you want to watch. Now, unfortunately, there isn't an option for all the geocaches as there used to be when this system was first set up. So we're going to just choose the traditional caches in this particular instance. And then you get a series of checkboxes that open up. Now, the two that I find most handy, or in fact, I only use one of these, but there are two that you might find handy, are publish and retract. Now, publish is when the approvers publish a cache for the very first time. So you can tick that. And you might be interested in the retract one as well, because that is when caches become archived. So you can tick just the publish one for this example. Next, you need to fill in the point of origin. So if you're looking to find out caches that are in your region, obviously you know the GPS coordinates for your home, so type those in. And then you get to select the distance, so you can pick a radius out from your home. Now, for me, I've got it set up to be notified when traditional caches are published within a 10-kilometer region, because if I was a first-to-find hunter, it's probably unlikely that if I wanted to do it straight away, I'm going to go beyond, say, 10 or maybe even 20 kilometers away from home. So you know how far you want to travel, so you can set your distance, and then you just click the enable button. And from now on, in this particular setup, any new traditional caches that are published in your area, it doesn't matter what time of the day it is, you'll get an email arriving in your inbox, and you can quickly click on the link and then rush out and be that first to find. So that's the first particular geocaching tip in this GeoTalk episode. If you've got any that you'd like to contribute, just drop us an email or give us a call at geotalk@mac.com or 02-850-GEO. And as we almost always do in every episode of GeoTalk, it's time to have a look at a couple of the events that are occurring around the country. On the 12th of July is Meet the Press, being held by Red Ochre Caching over in Dubbo. On the 19th of July, there's the Winter Challenge 2008, which is up in the Sunshine Coast hinterland up northwest of Brisbane. On the 26th of July, there's the Wollongong Invasion, which is being organised by M-Track. So I think from memory, there's a bunch of caches from Canberra and from southern Sydney who are heading down to the Illawarra region for that. On the 3rd of August, over near Brisbane Airport, is Meet the Wonder Stuff and ADF, and that'll be at the Southern Cross Memorial there near the airport. And on the 16th of August is Caching in Geelong Get Together. So down there at Corio Bay, is that event. If you've got an event that you want to let everyone know about, just drop us an email or call it in, and we're happy to play it on the show.
Hi, this is Marcus Vitruvius. The first half of South can be found by combining the sun and the stars. In a minute, you may find you have enough strength to climb to the top of the tower.
Gibbo from Darwin. If you find yourself in the bush on the right, then try 449.
Hello, this is Damo. The first clue is Undercliff.
Time to have a look at the GeoTalk mailbag, and got an email from Ian over in Gisborne who wanted to say g'day and say thank you for the podcast. He's also known on the geocaching website as VK3JAP, so I'm kind of guessing that he might be an amateur ham radio operator. So thanks very much, Ian, for the email. Also got a phone call in on the GeoTalk hotline from Peagleboy down in Illawarra. Here he is.
Peagleboy, and I'm just calling to give a shout out to Tom Webber, yeah, from Queen's Acacia, yeah, might be sure, yeah, see ya, bye. Bye.
Thanks very much for that, Peagleboy. Don't forget, if you want to send in some audio, just give us a call on 02-850-GEO. If GeoTalk doesn't come around often enough for you, there are plenty of other podcasts about geocaching around the world. One of those is Caches of the Round Table. The last episode, episode number 11, was myself, Daryl W, and Firefly03 from over in the US. We talk about travel caching, give you a few tips about what you might do to prepare for if you're caching either out of town, interstate, or around the world. So check that out at cachesoftheroundtable.com. I'll give you a link to that in the show notes. And here are two final clues for this episode of GeoTalk. The first one's from Snoover, and the second one from Map Monkeys.
Snoover's friends have a message for you.
Today is 4-2 by the numbers. It's 4-0.
Well, that's just about it for this particular episode. Of course, as we always do on GeoTalk, we give you the answer to the GeoTalk trivia question, and that is, who are the longest still active serving geocaches in the country? And the one on top of the list is Garpy in Victoria, who first started geocaching on the 13th of September, year 2000. Nemesis comes next from the South Island on the 7th of November 2000, and then Dave W. in New South Wales on the 10th of December in 2000. Now, I should point out these are all by state, so they're not in order of actual people who started. Alex from South Australia on the 6th of January 2001. In WA, it was Mental as Anything on the 26th of April 2001. Rastus 000 from Queensland on the 24th of June 2001. In Tasmania, the honour goes to Horace on the 23rd of June 2001. ACT, my friend Two Leg Drive, was the longest serving, or still is, active geocacher. He started on the 20th of August 2001. In North Island of New Zealand, it's Kai Mai Kid on the 13th of October 2001. And up in the Northern Territory, X Niall, who started on the 17th of March 2004. Interestingly, there's a lot of geocaches starting up now in the territory, so I'm sure that Niall, who probably had very few to start off with, there's plenty to keep him chasing around. Well, that's all for this particular episode. In the next episode, once again, we're going to be giving you the second round of clues, audio clues, for those caches that are going to be hidden around the country and are unveiled in August. And we're going to speak to someone about an interesting GPS device that'll help everyone keep tabs on where you are when you're hiking through the bush or in the middle of nowhere. Until next time, safe geocaching.